Hello and welcome to Corolla Classics for Saturday, November 12th, 2022. Thank you so much for joining us. You know how the show goes. We're going to play highlights of the Adam Carolla Show here for you this weekend. My name's Chris Loxamana. I'm the executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Corolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody. We've got a great Saturday of clips lined up for you.
Oh, we sure do. And I'm really excited. Before we get going with that, though, I want to remind everybody, if you want to submit a clip request to us, find us via email. Just shoot an email to classics@adamcarolla.com and let us know what you want to hear. Or we're also on Instagram, Facebook, wherever. Just find us, Gio or myself. Let us know what you want to hear on the show, and we're happy to look for it and play it. All right, this first clip, we're going to go back to 2014. We played some made-up movie, and I love this game just because there's been some pretty great ideas. My personal favorite, probably Spice of Life, starring Tina Fey. She had it, Cumin was the tagline, and it was so good. But let's hear another round of that one.
Look like a Meg Nutman.
Yeah, starring Meg Nutman, that's right.
I love that, yeah. this one's actually pretty great. We have a listener request in the pipeline. Somebody wants a specific one. And all my Superfan sidebars actually went through with the titles, the whole breakdown, the plots. Haven't found it yet, but in the process, I found this gem. Adam Carolla Show, 1295. Matt Atchity, not in this portion. Alison Rose and Brian Bishop. This is just made-up movie. It's from April of 2014. Check it out.
According to an ancient Mayan prophecy, in the year 2012, a hero would rise to turn your movie titles into blockbusters.
Glad it's not me.
That hero is Adam Carolla.
Boy, that could be me.
And this is Made Up Movie.
But certainly we did it in 2013.
Feel like it.
I'm pretty sure.
We definitely did.
All right. Let's hop on line four, talk to Aaron. Aaron?
Hey, how you doing, Adam?
What do you got?
I got The Last Job.
The Last Job. This is a toothless prostitute.
Oh, no.
I was going the same place.
Who is riddled with syphilis.
Okay.
And realizes her days of streetwalking. No. Sean Connery is pulled out of retirement.
Literally.
Uh-oh.
That's right.
He's like retired from acting.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
The movie is about getting him out of retirement to do a movie.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's so meta.
It's a movie about a movie.
I love that, and audiences do, too.
Yes. So it's a movie. We don't quite know. It's got a little Windy City Heat in it, if anyone knows that reference. But it's a movie within a movie.
A little Borat.
Yeah, a little Borat. Now, Sean is in on it. He plays Sean Connery, not wanting to do the movie called The Last Job.
But does he play like an exaggerated Sean Connery?
He plays a drunken Sean Connery.
I feel like Sean Connery might be an exaggerated Sean Connery.
I believe so, too.
Cantankerous old Scotsman.
That's right. Who's sort of like, if you got to tap a woman on the ass to get her attention every once in a while, so be it, you know?
Mm. Or a man.
Set in his way. Set in his way. That's right.
Old school.
Set in his way. That's right. So, the last job. It's meta. It's sort of a, I don't know what a docudrama, I don't know what they call them.
A mockumentary?
A mockumentary.
Does someone go to Scotland and basically give him the, we need the best speech? Why
right.
Why me?
That's right. That's good. No, that's solid.
Wow, Jack Silver and Sean Connery.
Anything raspy, I got it. So anything under the sun is raspy.
Right. So we're trying to get him out, and we're seeing what it's going to take. And, you know, we keep throwing out names and keep throwing. Mark Wahlberg's attached.
Oh, Sean's pretty good.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah. What do you think, Aaron? You like the mockumentary about getting Sean Connery to act in one last movie called The Last Job?
I think it's great. I mean, he's available. He's free.
And again, I think it's a new genre for
us. You know what I think? They'd be like, we've got, Pauly Shore and Andy Dick confirmed, but we've gone out to Mark Wahlberg.
Right, that's what it would be like.
Can it get even more meta? And we're trying to basically negotiate with Connery. Like, listen, we got Gene Hackman on speed dial. We'll make that call if we have to. You say
that's
no?
Right.
We're over Hackman's place.
Do you guys see one up there that you enjoy?
Yeah, line five.
Line five. Let's talk to Steve. 36, Dayton. Steve?
Yes, how you doing?
What's going on, man?
Not much. Get it on. Ground rule double. for opening week.
All right. Ground rule double.
So, right away, sports comedy, right?
Could be. Could be a sexual reference.
Ooh.
Too. You know?
My mind didn't go there, but now I'm suddenly flooded with stimulus.
My mind's trying to get there. Help me.
It's a sort of second base kind of move, you know.
Woman hitting coach or something like that.
Ooh.
Woman batting coach. Choke up on that bat, boys.
Interesting.
It could be like high school.
All right.
Give her a raspy voice.
All right. She's got a raspy voice.
Ooh, Kathleen Turner is.
No. All right. I got an idea. There's a, it's sort of a reverse Tootsie.
Okay.
It's a chick who is a great ball player.
College softball star?
Yeah, but kind of Gina Davis in League of Their Own kind of thing.
Well, modern day would be she probably play college ball.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, but she's trying, now she's retired, and she's trying to get a job coaching a woman's softball team at like Arizona State. And she realizes, unless they think she's a lesbian, she's not even going to be in the running.
Oh, so it's reverse discrimination. If she like in the old days, if they were gay, they'd throw you out. But
right,
now
but they've kind of found out, like, A, you want a lesbian for this job, and B, the last three coaches were lesbians, and so we kind of have to. You know, it's like L.A., if the police chief was black or the last two were black, you're going to hire, you got to kind of replace him with a black guy. Otherwise, someone's going to get pissed off. They need that. And also, it's a certain, it's an EEOC thing. It's like a certain amount of this community is in this, whatever. Ooh. So she's got to pretend to be a lesbian softball coach in order to get the gig.
I've already got the ending.
Of course, the assistant coach, good looking young guy who she has eyes for. He's attracted to her, but neither one of them. I mean, he thinks that she would never, you know, because of her proclivities.
His friends are telling him that he's just afraid of commitment, and that's why he's falling for someone who, like, she clearly doesn't like your kind.
That's right.
And then there's probably a lot of humor with, like, hot dogs and phallic-looking things.
Yeah.
He's only there because he wants to eventually break into the baseball staff. Like, he wants to be one of the baseball coaches.
Right.
And he's kind of slumming it with the, you know, first year with the softball team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, who's that guy?
Now, she's straight?
Yeah, she's straight.
She's closeted straight.
Closeted straight. Yeah. She can't. I mean, there's a lot of hilarious scenes when they go to the lesbian bar. Right. Come on, coach. You're coming with us. Oh, yeah. This place was my favorite. I'm a regular here.
Is this just someone who has to look good in a baseball uniform or someone who can actually, like Charlie Sheen, when he was in Major League, he could play. He looked like a pitcher. So it was believable. Is this someone who has to have some chops?
I don't know.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
He
was in that one terrible baseball movie.
I know. That's right.
He's not doing anything. Probably not doing anything.
He's gettable.
Yeah.
Freddie Prinze. All right.
Junior.
He's got eyes for the gal.
Of course.
And who's the gal? I mean, do we go like Jessica Biel? Was she in that other movie with Freddie Prinze?
Jennifer Lawrence is very hot right now.
She's retiring.
Oh, she is.
She's 23.
Oh, that's right.
A lot of the last jobs happening for this movie.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, there's Amy Adams not quite sporty enough.
How about a Jennifer Garner type?
Boom.
All right. Jennifer Garner. Hey, Steve?
Yes.
Now, what do you think about this?
You guys have taken it far beyond the ability of my limited imagination.
Remember back in the old days in like the major leagues when a player would get married during the season and all his teammates would get with the bats and they'd form
the
thing and they'd get married on the bat. That's how this movie ends. They get married on the mound and they walk down the aisle to home plate.
Mm-hmm.
They'll play ball.
Very nice.
And all the lesbians are crying.
That's right. That'll never be us.
Yep. Steve?
Hey, Adam, I just want to tell you real fast, I lost over 100 pounds from your motivation over a year ago.
Really?
I've been wanting to jump in here and tell you guys that.
How did I motivate you?
Just listening to the whole crap where you said, you know, talking about, I guess it's not crap, but talking about just because you're depressed, your body doesn't know the difference, that kind of lit a fire under my ass.
Yeah, just start moving.
Just started moving.
Lose the weight, chubby.
And what have you been doing other than what everyone tells me, stop drinking soda and start walking?
Honestly, I know everyone tells you it's the whole eat less and move more. It really is. I mean, it's a mindset.
How insane, really, thank you, Steve, and congratulations, by the way. How is it, I mean, and what does it say about us as human beings that there are 700,000 diet books when diet is something on a conceptual level that I think I understood by age 6 or 7, meaning don't eat ice cream. Eat the pasta or eat the protein, eat the chicken breast, and then do some push-ups, and you'll get strong. You know, this that kind of thing.
The weird thing is I feel like there's been such a campaign of misinformation. Like, I feel like, because I was always dieting younger, and there was always someone who was saying to me, you can't not eat. You can't not eat. You have to eat. If you stop eating, then you're not going to lose weight. You have to eat to lose. It's like there's this whole counterintuitive campaign where...
Right.
And I think it appeals to people because it's not comfortable to be hungry. It's not comfortable. When you're in the process of losing weight, you literally have to feel hunger.
Well, you know, it's pretty simple. What we love to do is we love to complicate everything, and we love to – this is how you sell a book, you know. There's no diet book called Tap Water, Push-Ups, and a Chicken Breast, dumb shit.
There should be.
There should be, but no one would buy that one.
It's a hit!
We want the one where we can eat all the Hawaiian-style pizza we want, not exercise, and still have the pounds just drip off us.
Right.
Everyone's looking for a shortcut on a one-way road.
That's good.
That's my book.
Just put comma dummy,
but
then you can
this
sell
is,
it.
This is, look, you don't have to go berserk. Just take the portion sizes and bring them down a little bit, and then... start exercising a little bit, and you're done. That's it. I mean, the notion that we all conceptually wrapped our minds around, lower the portions a little, easy on the donuts, and when you get home, rattle off a few push-ups or take a nice jog around the block. We all knew of that by age 7. Why was there another book ever written past when we knew about that? Yet it just shows our sort of detachment from the truth. And there's nobody who's buying one of those books that doesn't understand very clearly and firsthand. Start moving, put down the fork, pick up the dumbbell, you're done. We all get it. And that there's no mathematical shortcut really to that equation. It's calories in, calories burnt. Mm-hmm. That'll be that. Simple. You don't even, by the way, you don't even have to be on a diet. Just literally take your portions, knock them down about 33%. It's usually those last three or four fork loads, you're kind of full. I find myself coasting to the end of a meal. Mm-hmm. It's not, I didn't really need that last three or four bites.
You're usually satiated like well before you stop eating.
Yeah, if you would just sort of stop.
Right. You're, leave a little on the plate.
You're there, and then you weave in a little exercise, and then you're done.
It's amazing where something has never changed. If you look at the upcoming books this week or whatever, it's 60% diet books, it seems like. Extra diet and exercise, here's how to do this. Something that's never changed, yet books still get rid about it.
But it speaks to us. Our narcissism is growing, I believe. I feel like 50 years ago there wasn't a million diet books. Now we're all sort of looking for the free lunch in nature, and it doesn't exist. Look, forget about the push-ups and doing away with the cobbler. Give me a pill I can take instead. All right. Let's see. You see one up there that you like, Allison?
Line three.
Let's talk to Brandon, 38, Seattle. Brandon?
Lumber, slumber.
Lumber, slumber.
I mean, this is a zany rom-com packed with hijinks that takes place at a Home Depot-esque type store that sells lumber and home goods.
I see the guys from the Broken Lizard.
Yes.
I see the Broken Lizard guys and Jay
Chandrasekhar.
Chandrasekhar, and company.
Do we have the same problem the NFL had with not license? We can't license Home Depot, so it's called something else?
Yeah, of course.
Well,
yeah.
This is... the place across the street from the Home Depot.
Sort of like Average Joe's versus Globo Gym and Dodgeball. It's the little
exactly
guys.
Exactly that.
Okay.
Or like in You've Got Mail, this is the...
Right.
You and know,
the place is called Home Dojo. And like everyone wears a gi and an orange karate belt.
It's theme,
it's
perfect.
And these guys are all just the schlubs looking across the street. And you know, hijinks when they drive the forklift through the back wall and, you know, knock everything over.
The color belt you have depends on how long you've been there. If you're a rookie, you got the white belt.
That's
every
right.
time someone comes through the door, there's a little bell that's rigged up that plays a really stereotypical and offensive Asian music.
And these guys... Now.
Instead of a cash register.
There's right. There's a huge TV show, reality type show. We basically, it's, you know, the Ty Pennington show coming to town for a lumber store build off.
Yes.
It's a reality show. His coming to town. Yeah. I always love the way movies depict TV, especially like a reality TV show. You know, Dabney Coleman with a scarf holding his hands up all the time. Oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Looking through a lens.
That's right. Lens. He's got the finder. Yeah, he's looking through the lens all the time. And it's a big build-off to see. And, of course, the scrappy ragtag group over at Lumber Slumber specialize in building bunk beds or supplying supplying lumber for building bunk beds and lofts.
That's right.
Are going to get their shit together. Again, it's really just a ripoff of
Dodgeball. It's Ragtag Group.
Ragtag. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I said the Broken Lizard guys are over on this end.
Ooh, can we get Kilborn to play the smug guy who works with the big one? He's the manager next door.
Yeah. We get Kilborn to play the smug manager.
Ooh, now, does he have an interest in the Katie Holmes type that pals around with the Broken Lizard guys?
Oh.
And something happens there.
That's right. Him and Brian Bosworth. It's kind of his muscle.
I totally saw that coming.
Over there. He's got the gi with the sleeves cut off.
Yeah.
Like crease. That's right. From Karate Kid. Yeah, Katie Holmes is sort of the tomboy.
Right.
And she
a nod to her Dawson's Creek days.
Yeah. That's right. And Craig Kilborn's constantly going after, but you know she doesn't like him. He's
no,
creepy.
But I think probably at some point she has to pretend to like him to get some information.
Uh huh. And of course he goes for it.
Of course.
Oh,
yeah. And she has to know more about hardware than he does. Like she has to put him to shame in one scene.
Mm-hmm. I feel a cameo coming on by Mike Rowe.
Okay.
He's the host of the fake reality show that's coming to town for the big build-off. Yeah. I like this. Right. So far, I'm feeling pretty good about all this stuff.
This studio's cranking out some hits.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. I'll pick one more. Let's see. Jump up to line one. Brad, line 133, Oregon.
Hey, what's up, Adam?
What's going on?
Get it on. Movie title, Floater.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was bordering on a joke, so I'm worried about this one. What do you got?
There's a guy. It's a time travel movie.
All right.
Ooh.
And it's a guy who gets caught up in between times and in between wormholes or what have you. He goes through different periods of time and floats through those periods of time, but he's not really in there and he doesn't know where he's going to be next or whose life he's going to enter next.
Quantum leap-ish.
It's got a little there was the Tales of Manhattan or something like that. My grandfather made a movie a million years ago called The Tales of Manhattan. Now, this is Laszlo Gorog, the writer.
Name dropper.
He made one of those movies they made later on was New York Stories, I think, later on.
Yeah, that was Coppola.
And Woody Allen and everyone else. That's what we do with this movie, with The Floater. Everybody gets a shot at it. So, in The Tales of Manhattan, it was a tuxedo, tailcoat. And one segment would have it, a conductor is wearing it, you know. And I don't know, he gets booed off stage and throws it out into the alley. And then you see a hobo put it on. And now that's the next story. He's wearing it.
Oh, this is sort of artistic. Yeah, nice. That is sort of like a bad movie, but we can do a better version of it. Four Rooms with Tim Roth, where he was the bellman. It was Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez. He was the same guy in all four of those scenes. Bad movie, but this will be a time traveling.
So what is the floating thing?
Him. He's in all
him.
The. Yeah, he's the dude. He's the bellhop.
He's the guy who's caught in between, and he pops up in people's lives and in different eras and different times. And also, you know, he knows the past and he knows the future. Once in a while, he gets caught up, and, you know, and it's a beautiful young lady, and someone's sitting around and 1871 going, if only there was something called penicillin, she could live.
Weird that they would know the name.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
What?
It's weird that they would know the name.
Oh.
Already.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But again, this is why we do this process.
We're workshopping it right now.
But he knows he could, you know, get a piece of bread, make some mold or something, but he can't. He can't interfere.
No, I mean, butterfly effect.
Got to watch the young lady die on him.
So that's how it happened in history. It has to go down like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Does he go in the future at some point, or is he only traveling as you know, up to his present day?
Interesting.
He goes in the future, but it's just like 5 years from now.
Things are about the same. Yeah. He's still driving the same car.
Yeah. People still driving it.
It's got 62,000 more miles on it, but still the same.
Okay.
All right. There you go. I wanted to do a movie. I know this sounds like me, and it sounds weird. I wanted to do a movie. I don't know how close I got to it. I think I wrote a couple of beats out on it. I wanted to do a movie called My Life as a Lamborghini. And the beginning...
The Adam Carolla story?
The beginning of the movie would show like a 1965 Lamborghini driving off, you know, out of the Lamborghini factory in some Italian playboy with his hot mistress, you know, and the thin mustache and everything. And then there'd be the scene where he pulled up into his house and his wife saw the lipstick on the collar and you'd see the car parked in the garage and you'd hear, you know, the fighting and the glass breaking and the gunfire. And the next scene would be somebody buying the Lamborghini and their trials and tribulations. And then by the time you get to 1982, it's all broken down and there's guys shooting up junk in it. And at some point it gets refurbished or it gets weird, but you follow this thing.
I like that idea.
It sounds sort of surreal, but if you think about, you take a car, 1965 Mustang. Some guy got that car at the height of his game, you know, newlywed or bachelor. You know, if somebody bought a Lamborghini in 1965, by the way, that Lamborghini in 1965, its sticker price was $14,000, which was the price of a house, or at least what my dad bought a house for, you know, almost 10 years later in the Valley. So this guy who buys his cars on top of his game, by the time we get to the mid-80s, that car's got some rust. It's busted down. People don't look at it. And maybe it's involved in a crime. Maybe there's a homeless guy sleeping in it as it just gets passed from person to person, from story to story. But I would love to find me a 65 Mustang and show me who owned it for how long. And each story was the argument that was happening in the kitchen, and they would always just cut to the car sitting in the garage like it was sort of silently listening to or experiencing whatever was going on.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
It's like Lamborghini Gump.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
That's what it is. No. I just always thought it'd be an interesting story. All right, do we have an outro?
Yeah.
And now some made-up movie back in 2014. All right. Let's go back to 2013 now. We played this clip earlier this week when we were playing Blah Blah Blog of Sarah Bareilles at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame playing the Laura Nyro song Stony End. And Adam loves that performance. Well, one time, Sarah Bareilles actually came into studio. David Wilde brought her in, and they talked about this performance, among other things. She's a mega talent. I'm an Uber fan, and I was so excited to have her in.
Yeah, it turns out Gina had no idea this happened, and she declared that it must have been way before her because she's been on for so long. Of course it was. It was Adam Carolla Show 1110, long time ago, back in 2013. We played a portion of this interview before, but not the full thing. And since nobody remembers this happening, I decided to play part one today and part two tomorrow on the Carolla Classics feed. Make sure to subscribe to the Carolla Classics separate RSS feed to get both episodes, Saturday and Sunday. Until part two tomorrow, here is part one, Adam Carolla Show 1110, Maria Menounos, Kevin Undargo, Sarah Bareilles, David Wilde, Alison Rosen, Brian Bishop, June of 2013.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Maria Menounos, and singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles, plus Alison Rosen on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, and a visit with David Wilde. And now, Kimmel call off the wedding. Gay marriage is now legal, and Adam has a very important question to ask you. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. David, Sarah, thank you so much for coming in. I know I was, it was a year ago, maybe a year and a few weeks ago. And good day, Allison Rosen.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
And Bald Brian.
Hi, this is Becky Honkington.
I was watching the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they inducted posthumously Lauren Nero, and I was just watching you do Stony End, and I was just so impressed.
Thank you.
And I just said, David, I want that girl in my studio, and scant 13 and a half months later,
I said, you pow. You creepy-ass cracker, I'll do it for you.
I'll get you. And
you ask, you get.
I just thought, first off, do you get nervous with that stuff? Because it's different, but you're performing in front of world-class musicians in the audience. It's not just a bunch of drunken college-age fans.
No, it's like Guns N' Roses and Red Hot Chili Peppers. And yeah, I was terrified. Oh my God, I was so nervous that day. And then standing side stage waiting to go on, I got a pep talk from Carole King. It's like, mm-hmm. It's like supposed to make you feel better, but then you feel really uncomfortable with that as well. The whole thing was super surreal.
What did she say?
She's like, oh, you're going to be great. It's going to be fine. They're going to love you. She's like tiny and she's so slight and she's really cool. She seems like someone I would want to hang out with.
Shouldn't there be – I feel like there's a right thing to say and a wrong thing to say, and I feel like a lot of people say the wrong thing in that moment. A lot of, are you nervous? I'd be nervous. You know, there's a lot of – it's live. You should be nervous. Like,
there's so many people out there.
I almost feel
like that would take
people?
Off the pressure, though. Like if someone just calls it like it is and you just say, God, you must be freaking out right now, aren't you? I'd be like, yes, thank you. I would feel like there would be communion in that. Like, finally.
How much practice time do you get with the band and everybody? Because it's a big cachet up there. It's a lot of strings and backup singers. And
well, I messed up. The performance is incorrect. And
it is?
If you look back at it.
You're lucky I was drunk, sister.
If you look back at it, at one point you can see me look over at the band and I'm apologizing with my eyes because I screwed up the arrangement. We had two rehearsals, like two run-throughs, mm-hmm. You know, a few times, and then I screwed it up. So clearly I'm not the professional.
Well, let's watch a little of it.
Oh, let's do.
You tell me. I have no idea when
you
screwed it up.
I'll walk you through. This will be like director's cut.
Yeah. I was just watching it thinking how impressive it is. And also, I always like it because I think it's what's... Now, you guys... I'm going to say this once and then you forget I've ever said it, right? It's what's uniquely beautiful about this country. You have everybody from all different groups and nationalities and backgrounds, and they all just sort of meld together and create one beautiful instrument.
We can cut that out.
Cut that out.
Yeah. That is the first and most sincere thing I've ever heard you say.
I love it. I love it when I see the Asians going nuts on the cello and the black folks singing away and the Jewish broad who wrote the song. Or, you know, I like it.
Now it sounds more like you.
There.
Exactly.
And that one sax player with the hat on backwards, it's every time a sax comes out, he's there.
We were talking before you got here, Adam, and like Lauren Nero was famously a nervous performer, you know, and I think she's one of the greatest artists and one of the least recognized great artists ever. Mm. But I actually think Sarah sings this, may God forgive me, a little better than Laura. I don't think Laura ever gave a performance this beautiful, just perfect.
Aw, no. You're being sweet.
She's looking up from hell right now enjoying this. Thanks, David. Wow. So when are you going to screw up?
I'll show you.
Okay.
There's a whole other verse. We're going to have to talk about some other
I like
stuff.
Listening to it, and I don't mind looking at
swear?
It either. I got to be honest.
Can we?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Fuck swear
away.
Oh, fuck. Thank God. All right. I'm trying to think of some... I was just looking out and seeing all the famous people that... I don't know, and who don't have no idea who I am. It's great because Bette Midler introduced me, and then she's like Sarah Bareilles. She like just
could you recognize famous faces from the stage?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, and
oh,
for
the
some
Rock and
reason,
Roll Fame, the front row is crazy every year. This year it was insane.
And for some reason, I was at the Guitar Gods table, So it was me and ZZ Top and Derek Trucks, and I'm like, I don't know why I'm here.
You gonna screw up?
Yeah, but just wait. Oh, but I just hit the money note here, guys. Hang on, the money note. Here it comes. It's gonna all right. Come, I promise. I'm sorry we had to listen to the whole thing. Oh, get it. But you can see me, I'm starting to feel pretty good because I'm like,
yeah,
towards
the
end.
Note.
I'm like,
you hit the,
well,
note.
I'm like,
the money note.
And I'm supposed to go to a different section here. And then I sang the wrong thing. Here I go, I'm going to look. My voice cracks because I'm nervous and I'm like, oh shit, sorry guys. But they were super professional.
If you're going to do that,
right,
that's
totally fucked that up.
But that's the time to
oh
do it.
God.
You hit the note, like you're walking on sunshine.
Oh yeah,
at that
feeling
point.
Pretty good though. Yeah. And then I get overconfident, and then I fuck everything up. That's
in fact,
like my
then she
jam.
Broke into Walking on Sunshine. It was a really great tribute to Katrina and the Waves.
But it's an interesting psychological thing, which is in whatever endeavor you have these sort of little marks that you go, well, this is trouble. These are the rapids, and if I can get through these rapids. Mm. Then I'm good. Mm. And so emotionally, you're worried about that high note, mm-hmm. and then you nail that high note, and then you just sort of let off. Oh. Like you go, all right, I got this race won, but there's still a couple laps to go. You just decide to start cruising a little bit.
Race, like that dude, the rookie driver, remember, who did the lap, was about to win the whatever it was, Indy 500?
Dan Weldon.
Came around the last.
Oh, not Dan. Yeah.
But the dude came around the last turn. It was his to win, and he just, whatever, lost his concentration and went in the wall.
That's a weird, you know, to me, that's
his race to win. It was the last quarter.
It's the most, it's, to me,
I just want to be clear. Are you making a,
no,
a comparison between me?
Yeah.
Do you feel like I just, like,
that was yours to win. That was yours to win.
Ball
he's just
of
kissing
fire.
Adam's ass because he's a car, like, race car
crash
driver.
Crash and burn.
No, I couldn't. Again, that was barely a missed shift. I could not even hear any gears grinding or any double pumping of the clutch or anything. I watched that more times than I'm comfortable admitting.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Thanks to the
about.
Magic of TiVo, I just would enjoy it on a nightly basis. Just be sitting there on my queue, and I'd leave it at that one spot, and then I just go back and watch you perform again. And I really enjoyed it.
Awesome, thanks.
But the whole Dan Weldon thing and the whole Indy 500 thing is a weird thing that I'm not, you know, I'm not religious, but I am in sort of the great magnet. Mm. There's a certain, I always just called it the great magnet. And the guy who you're talking about as a rookie is, well, we'll figure out his name. But that guy on the last lap went on to just hit the wall when he shouldn't have. I mean, he was just—he could have coasted and won the Indy 500 as a rookie. Hildebrand was his name. He talked to me at a race. He came up to me and announced himself as the guy who came in second at the Indy 500. It was that big a deal a few years ago. The guy who won, J.R. Hildebrand, the guy who won, Dan Weldon, was the greatest gift anyone could give you because you're in second place by a mile. And the next thing you know, this guy makes this incredible mistake on the very last corner, the very last lap, and you win the Indy 500. And then 3 months later, he was dead in Las Vegas at the Las Vegas Speedway.
Oh, so you like the one who was supposed to do Apprentice?
He was the one who Andretti, when I was doing Apprentice, Andretti went to Vegas to do the Vegas race, and then I was, you know, it's like I was talking. I was his teammate. I was talking to him on Friday night. It's like I go to Vegas to do this race, and his teammate died in Vegas. So you go from the greatest fortune, and then you wonder what pulled Hildebrand into the wall. You know what I mean? Like, was this guy supposed to leave this earth 3 months from now? So we're going to give him the biggest win in his career. What or does this all just sound like crazy bullshit to you guys?
I think Sarah's influence making you much deeper.
I'm really
and
thinking
more
about
emotionally
it.
Complex. I've never. This. It's very profound all of a sudden.
When those Asian broads sing back up. Oh no! Wait a minute! I got that crew wrong.
No, right. You don't know. Adam is turning over a new leaf. He's trying to be less angry.
I'm sensing.
I am. I'm getting nicer.
I notice that.
I can't do it while I'm driving, but other places.
I have a question for Sarah. Yeah. On your new album is because I think of Laura Nyro as a patron saint of soulful New York white chicks. Like, she's the greatest ever. And your new album is just like your New York – is there any – did the spirit of Laura touch you at all on this new record? Because this is your first record, The Blessed Unrest, mm-hmm. if I'm saying that correctly. It's a New York – it has a New York feel. There's a song on there called Manhattan that's beautiful, like one of your best songs yet. But is there kind of a Laura Nyro New York – vibe at all, you think?
I suppose. I mean, in a way, I definitely think the city just – it has informed the sound intensely. I don't think you can be in New York and not sort of like reek of it a little bit, you know? It's very infectious in that way.
Is it the blessed unrest or
– I say the blessed unrest because it sounds better.
Available, by the way, July 16th. And you're going to go grab it over there on Amazon. Click to ancroll.com and – bless us a little bit.
I would pre-order it so they don't run out.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. They're smart. Not making very many of these records. So
smart.
So go now.
Go now.
Are you in the city? You live in...
I just moved to the West Village. I've been in L.A. for 14 years. And
oh, really?
Yeah. I came here... I grew up in Eureka, Northern California, and then came here to go to UCLA and then kind of just stuck. And
UCLA to study music or to study
I studied communications and I got a minor in Italian. I tried to take a music placement exam before the freshman year started, and I don't know anything about theory. So it was – I literally looked at the test and like turned it over and was like, I don't fucking know any of this shit. So I'm done.
Are your parents educators or are they professionals? Like they wanted you to follow your – be educated or – I mean not be educated, but I mean
no,
it's like not follow
like
music
to
or
– keep me – as dumb as possible. My my dad is an insurance adjuster and then also had like a logging business in the summer. Logging is a big industry.
A lot of range. Yeah. Although it's a good business to be in where like, guys are using chainsaws and climbing up trees with spikes.
My dad was a rabbi and a smelter, so I relate very much.
Do you think that guy on the job site at the logging would be super cautious or super risky? Like, yeah, go ahead up there.
No, he's like, he's taken care of. He's like, got it.
I don't know, but the lumberjack competition is the least Jewish, most insane competition in the world. There's three or four events. They have the one where the guy has – there's like the unlimited competition with the chainsaw where the guy just has a snowmobile motor that's been modified and it weighs 200 pounds and it's on a thing that's 20 feet long. It's unwieldy and they're seeing – and there's smoke flying out of the thing and it's just blades flying everywhere. Then there's the crazy one where they make a notch in the log. They quickly make a notch and they shove a plank in it. Then they jump up on the plank and they start whacking away. But you keep thinking, when that plank goes on the backswing, that axe is going into the fucking stands and it's razor sharp. Then there's all the hand stuff. Oh, yeah. But then there's the craziest one of all is up the pole as fast as they can go.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the rope. But then the race isn't to the top, it's to the bottom. So the fastest way to the bottom, you know, if you're a little behind when you get to the top, just go ahead and lift the rope, move your feet, and you just drop.
My favorite thing to see lumberjacks do, and I don't know if this is something that lumberjacks really do or just things I've seen in movies, where they put a log in the water and then they run on it.
Part of the competition.
You know, I have family that does that.
Really?
My dad's cousin, half my family.
The fuck? You've been sitting on this information for what, 10 years now?
Half my family's from Canada, from Vancouver area.
What?
And,
this never comes up.
My dad's cousin.
It's a goddamn outrage.
My dad's cousin is I don't know if he's professional, but he can be professional. Back when I was younger, he did this stuff like that was his thing. He did the strap, the whack, whack, all the way up. He had the spiked shoes. The spikes were in the insole, like in his heel.
Nice.
Not his heel, but his instep.
Yeah.
And you hike all the way up, and you hike all the way down, and he did the axe throwing and all that stuff.
The log rolling, I love that.
Does that even – like the other things you have to do that within, you know, the industry. Like you have to get up the tree. You have to cut things down. Do you ever have to like run on a log though? Or is that maybe if you're cutting trees near a river
and then
you drop something?
That was their version. I mean, you know, this is
they're
back.
Embellishing.
It's wood flair.
No, I mean, this is back before.
It's like a macho Lord of the Dance.
There's no TiVo or YouPorn in the woods. You know, these guys got to keep themselves entertained. You know what I mean? There's a lot of keeping themselves
they're just bored.
Entertained.
That's kind of like there's no atheists in foxholes. There's no YouPorn in the woods.
Well,
some way to get wood.
You got to figure That's out a way point. To keep yourself kind of amused.
Yeah.
Also, you know, someone's got to be the best at something. But the great part is where they get going one direction, and then they stop. They do a lot of eye contact.
Oh, yeah. It's all psyching each other out.
It's very intimate.
And then they'll do the one. There's a strategy where you just look at the person and go, you ready to go? And they'll go as fast as they can just to see if they can knock you off. And then there's all the dog part. They get the labs in there jumping off the pier.
Oh, I never saw that part.
Oh, there's a whole dog competition where they run off the edge of the pier and they get like 22 feet, you know, the chocolate lab just diving off. I don't know if it's part of the lumberjack or an extension of it.
Was this the average weekend in Eureka that Adam is describing?
Yes. Yes. Well,
so, and Mom did what?
Same thing, log rolling. Lot of, yeah, lumberjacking.
Really?
Lumberjaning. No. My mom worked at Kinko's for a long time, and then she worked as a funeral director after that. She worked as a secretary for my dad when I was really young, and then they split up, and that relationship got awkward, and so she got a job at Kinko's. And then the funeral thing was after I was already gone to school. So people, because I'll say that, and people are like, oh, my God, did you see dead bodies? And no, I never saw any dead bodies.
But the notion of – I always say this. Actually, I was saying it yesterday, which is everybody – that the same human beings have days where they have to go to the dentist or have something biopsied or something like that or you know, get a parking ticket or whatever it is. And then there's, hey, we're taking a guided tour through Disneyland where we get to go up to the front of the line and all that. So the same human beings can have a great day, or the same human beings can be the ones that are receiving the parking ticket or getting something biopsied. I don't understand why you'd want to see everyone on their worst day all the time.
Like, I don't either.
You work at Hooters, you don't have a lot of shitty days. You're catching people in a good mood. In other words.
Yeah.
What's the best job for always seeing people at their best?
Fluffer?
Yeah, I was thinking, there's a guy who holds the giant foam core check when Ed McMahon shows up.
Issuing checks for like a game show or something.
Yeah,
game show too. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, the good looking chick stands next to the stack washer dryer set and, you know, does the thing with her hands, you know, like, hey, look at, I don't know how much we need her. I feel like she's pulling focus. Trying to stare at the Kenmore, and I'm staring at her, but she's moving her hands. Like, there we go.
But if you're a nice person at a funeral home, you do a lot of good in the world. Having gone through that with my dad not that many years ago, if you have an asshole on that day, that makes the worst day of your life worse. And if you have a nice person, it gets you through it. So I think that's actually a great thing.
That's what it fed for her is she felt like she could give – my mom is very comforting, and she felt like she could give people comfort, and that made her feel good. But ultimately, it took a toll, and she had to
fail. You
need
comfort at Kinko's, too, though.
Yeah.
Kinko's is the worst place on earth.
Someone described it, and I agree. It feels like you're in the inside of a microwave.
Is it the lighting? Oh,
kill the Kinko's ad.
That's why it's gone.
Yeah.
Is Kinko's
– it was like – when I would go,
it smells like toner, right?
It's just everyone's angry and late with their shit that was like, and they don't know how to use anything.
Nothing works.
It's all like too expensive and disorganized, and the binding is backwards, and you know.
And it's people pulling drawers out of the printer and trying to find things, and then with that feeling that you're going rogue because really it should be a Kinko's employee doing it.
Totally. And then really what you're trying to do is make the calendar with like your grandkids on it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I
you struck a chord with me, clearly.
I hate Kinko's so much.
I do too.
I hate it so much.
I do too.
We now return
Kinko's,
to first world proms with Sarah Nelson. Oh, and they only have goldenrod. They don't have the Mustang or Ecru. They're just goldenrod. And I know. This is why the world hates us. Because we're devastated that the Kinko sucks. That I couldn't get my dog's picture on the mug was a little askew. Just a little bit. And it's a total disaster. And I want to kill myself now. Yeah.
That was me on my worst day, though. A Kinko's employee would have seen that anytime I had to go to Kinko's. Because I've been always putting it off for months. David, you know, this was back in the day when you had to make copies of your articles.
Oh, yeah.
And it was always – I would put it off for months and months, and I would go in, and it would really be the worst day of my life.
Yeah. Everyone they're dealing with is on a deadline, behind, screwed up.
Yeah.
It never work. Here's one where no one's ever happy. Car rental. Place at the airport. Every time I pull up, somebody's going, why do I bother making a reservation if you're not going to? Yeah. I ordered a full size. You guys give me a Yaris. I don't need a Yaris right now. And then a lot of like Sophie's Choice stuff going on where we're like, we have two Denalis left and there's five of you. Well, you know, I have important meeting in town. Like, there's a lot of begging.
That is a lot like the Holocaust, Adam.
Yes. No, it's not as, I mean, it's obviously not quite as bad, but it's bad. You work, and then there's a lot of the ones that are affiliated with the other one where you go to the Alamo and it's like, oh, well, Hertz is our parent company, so maybe it's on their computer, and everyone seems like they're in a shitty mood, and everyone's driving a beige car with a bad
interior.
Why do
they only have PT Cruisers? Like, when you go to rent things?
They just
like,
have shitty American cars, and then there's a lot of confusion. Like, there's that move where they go, you want to do the free fill-up? We can do the fill up here, or you can fill up yourself. I don't care how fucking rich I get. I'm always like, no, we're going to fill it up and then there's some argument over how much and all that bullshit. And then there's the insurance part. Mm-hmm. I never
walking
get insurance.
Around the car, like marking the ding.
I don't like that judging. I just had that with a valet guy where the guy had to walk around the car and then you see him at a certain point. The car's pristine. He has to reach down and, okay, come on, asshole. Yeah. There's nothing there. It's a fucking dead bug. You're not going to circle that on your weird. And by the way, that's like, it's a weird corners thing where they have like a car carcass,
flattened
like
out.
A body, and they're drawing like bullet wounds and stuff. You know that person?
On the diagram of the car.
No. We should give that, I don't know who that dude is who they use. They have a woman. Mm-hmm. And a dude, I feel like we need some different ethnicities represented in that. It's just the one.
Might be hard to write on.
Well, we could use a different color. We could use like a China marker for the black people. And then there's no hair. I feel like the person needs some hair. Do you know what I'm talking about? Whenever they're filling out
hair.
The thing?
I know. I really
you could lend them some hair. All right. Let's see what I want to do. David Wild.
Sir.
Sarah, do you have a. Do your people say you have an out? Do you have an out? A hard out?
7:45 is my
out. Oh, okay. Yeah. Good. Well, you can sit there and listen to me complain.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Can I mention one other song from her record?
Mm-hmm.
From Sarah's record? There's the single that's out or been out is a song called Brave that I love, but you have to see the video or you can hear the song, but Rashida Jones, who has got to come in soon, and I think I've talked to her about coming in, directed it, and the two of them made this amazing video for a great song. And I think the lyric is very much – it's not about you, but it could be.
Could be about me? Another,
it's about being brave, and I feel – it's about, it's about a more morally upstanding person, I think, but –
uh-huh.
But no one could be as brave as you. So if you want to play brave a little, I think it would be a good idea.
Listen, just because you're a puss, that doesn't make me brave.
No, you are. Listen to the lyrics. They're not. It's about someone coming out, so it's close to you in a way.
Mm.
But it is very Adam Carolla.
All right, we got a little of that. It's gonna. We got the video.
This is all hidden camera stuff.
Oh.
So it was actually hidden cameras. You can be
amazing, you can turn a phrase into a weapon. So we're watching a guy dancing now.
It's really high
depth. And they don't know they're... But they had to sign off to get on the video, right?
So the dancers are with me, but we went into public places all around L.A., and then they just were dancing. They had a little earwig, like headpiece, where they were hearing the music, and then they were dancing, and then the people around them were confused, understandably so. We tried to get dancers that were just sort of normal people. Like, I didn't want to do like super fancy, although he's amazing.
Who's giving it up? That was a face plant.
My friend Summer Shapiro. She's a...
Summer didn't get enough attention from Daddy growing up because she just did a full face plant in the concrete. Is she in Chinatown?
Yeah.
That's one of the worst pieces of concrete to hit, the Chinatown concrete.
I'm in Pershing Square.
How did you and Rashida come up with the idea?
I wanted to do like a flash mob, and then we saw this really cool video about a girl dancing. She was dancing in LAX, and we kind of got the idea about that, and then just wanted to expand on that idea and bring it to a bunch of different places. So sort of brave to put yourself out there in a public space and dance like an absolute idiot.
Like, where's your big... Is there a place that would surprise us, like, you know, you're huge in Hungary or Germany?
I am huge and hungry, and that is surprising. Place?
Is there an Asian country? Is there a place?
Oh, God. I don't know.
You find that stuff out, though,
right?
I wish.
I don't think so. But I would love to start a rumor. Singapore. I did pretty well in Singapore. I don't know. Like, I haven't toured Asia that much, but the Philippines actually are pretty lovely fans.
Brian told an amazing story before you got in about in Italy. Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, I was stuck in Italy for a week after that volcano erupted, and we were stuck there and had to make our way around the country for not knowing where we were going to stay or going to do. And we had just downloaded Sarah's album, and it became the soundtrack to our whole trip. And obviously, it was a very celebratory trip for us.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the volcano was up in the air, and it was fucking up all the jets.
It grounded every airplane in Europe. Right. I mean, people were stuck.
That was insane.
And so...
And some people could take the train back to their countries, but obviously it's not the case for us.
Yeah. Right. But if you got to get stuck somewhere...
I was going to say, Italy, as I was saying earlier, not the scariest place in the world to be stuck. And it would help that we had Sarah's album to sort of be the soundtrack for our time there.
You're welcome for that, I think, is what you're trying to say.
That's kind of interesting because it's like when you make a mix cassette back in the day and you would use that mix cassette on like a road trip and then those songs get kind of burned into your psyche.
Totally.
And you remember that time. Someone's got to... It's weird. Like I don't know if stuff is too accessible now do you feel like kids are having too many experiences? Like you had,
I feel like the attention span is so short, don't you?
Yeah, and right. they have so much music at their fingertips in a way that we didn't. I mean, I remember when you would go on a trip, if you brought your Discman or whatever, you had to choose which albums to take with you. Mm. It was like, okay, I want these 6 or these 10 or whatever. Whereas now you have all your music is right there. So you don't listen to it.
But it's not only music. I think it's everything. Like just everything's flying at them so fast that those sort of moments, you know, that you have those, you know, you would remember when you went to the Grand Canyon with your parents that one time when you were 9 or whatever it was, and a handful of experiences. But there's, at least with my kids, there's something flying at them every day. Your kids are eating sushi with Bob Dylan right now.
They're here.
Yeah, no.
But Bob's back. Yeah, serving.
They're Skyping him in.
Exactly.
But the point is, it's like everything is just – my kids go from one cool event to the next cool event, and I don't know how – I don't know if you have room to have them all
processed
and etched in and become a memory.
Or is that your kids have access to super cool things?
Well, my kids are super spoiled. Except for one of the problems with being spoiled is you don't really know it. You just think whoever's telling you you're spoiled is a dick.
That's the hallmark of being spoiled.
It's like when someone's drunk and you're telling them, yes, you calling me an asshole means you have a problem with booze. And then they go, fuck you. And then they throw a bottle at you. It's not satisfying. You know, I should plan an intervention where I take them to a place with no plasma screens. And
do you put restrictions on like their use of electronics at all, or do you?
No, I do. I have no restrictor plate, no governor. Back to racing on my parenting. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have this basic theory that there's no filter anymore. It's all coming at them at light speed. They're sitting there on their iPads and their tablets and God knows what. And I now have this thing where it's just everything is going to hit them. And your whole job is to prepare them as human beings for all that is going to hit them.
Spectrum,
not to get them to avoid what it is inevitably going to hit them, because I don't feel like avoiding it's going to work anymore. They're
totally
used to kind of be like, you know, no TV after 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's when the shows get a little bit racy or whatever it is. Now it's just all the time, wherever. And it's on every device. And it's just, it's it's coming from all directions.
Yeah, my wife did a good job of trying to make control somewhat, but after a certain point, once they get a certain age, you can't control anything.
Yeah.
They go anyone's house, they're seeing everything. Like, I took my kids to the Kubrick exhibit the other day, and it's like, my younger son said, oh, yeah, I've seen, like, what was it, Full Metal Jacket. And I'm like, really? It's like, I think I would be the one to tell you when you're going to see these crazy movies. By the way, there's one mutual friend you have in common who maybe you should bring up, Ben Folds. You know, Sarah worked with him and was on TV with him. And
yeah.
I know he's one of the other people you like in music.
I enjoy Ben quite a bit.
He's a good dude.
Great
Has
piano
he been
player.
On the show?
Oh, yeah. Great guy. Great personality. Great sense of humor. And I love that guy's art. You know, I just love his music. And I always love the fact, and I was just sort of use him as an example, which is that guy just has no rearview mirror when it comes to art. It's like he just powers forward. He just wants to work with somebody else, do something else, do an album with Shatner, like just crazy stuff. Everyone else is dusting off something and bringing it back and doing a hip hop version of some hit they had, you know, 20 years ago. He just seems like he just creates.
Yeah.
But also because he can.
Very prolific individual. Absolutely. Like he does. But he also – he gave great advice to me. We worked together. He produced an album of mine, an EP that I did 2 years ago, and – he was just about the writing process, because of course, like, he's one of my musical heroes. Like,
you guys should mate.
We did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, we didn't. You
really need to. I mean, for society.
For the fans. Yeah, for the fans. We'll just do it for the fans.
Well, like a super generation of crazy piano playing.
Yeah.
You know, songwriting. You know what I mean? Like, don't you feel like your offspring...
It's sort of an obligation. I can sort of look at it that
kind
way.
Of a societal thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I'll look into it.
Ben tried that line. It didn't work.
Yeah.
I do. I say that stuff. People think I'm joking. I'm not really. Not that much. I mean, you know, because you could hook up with a logger and they could just go that direction.
Yeah.
You know, that could. That,
that's true.
You know what I mean? But if we hooked up with Ben, we'd pretty much...
I don't know. Maybe does it cancel itself out? I thought, you know, it might... I mean...
Well, we got to find out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only one real way to find this out.
That's so true.
This segment has been sponsored by Ben Folds.
Yeah. And, I mean, it'd be a lot of pressure, but the good news is, you know, boy or girl, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You put them down at the piano early. Ben would have to write a song about...
Yeah.
Your child and name it, you know, at least you'd get that out of it.
Yeah.
You know, even if the relationship went south,
sure.
You get a really cool song about your
His
kid.
His biggest hit was about knocking someone up. So this could be
brick.
Good for him. It could be the single.
Cycle. Yeah. Brick two.
Brick two. Another brick in the wall.
He's got
the kid Brick.
Oh,
two.
Boy.
Brick two.
Also, he also has a good song about his kid, too, I think. I don't.
He probably does.
Yeah. We'll have to figure that one out. I think it's.
Oh, the girl's name? Oh,
yeah,
great song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that song.
All right, now let me find. All right, here's what we got to find. We got to find that. We got to find John Hiatt did a song called Georgia Ray about his daughter, which is just, I love. It makes me. Is it Gracie? I don't know.
Yeah, Gracie.
Is it Gracie?
That's his daughter's name.
Yeah, that's Gracie.
All right. Nice job. The Porcelain Punisher, Matt Fondelier, found that.
I have a John Hiatt song.
We have Georgia Ray? Oh, all right. Good. Georgia Ray is probably... Yep. Georgia Ray's probably... The song's... got to be from Bring the Family or Slow Turning or something like that. So,
Slow Turning.
What's up?
Slow Turning.
Slow Turning? So what year are we talking about here?
88.
So Georgia Ray's probably in rehab now.
It's sweet when you write a song about your kid. Then there's people who write songs about other people's kids. That's a little creepy. A little creepy.
Yeah.
But hey Jude.
That was
you know, that was that one for Julian.
I had that one called Hot Neighbor Kid by the pool. It didn't
take
I mean, I don't sing, but I can write. But it was no takers.
No takers.
All right, let's play it. Keep playing it. It just makes me want to knee my dad in the nuts.
For not writing a song for you?
Yeah.
But you know what's tricky about that is if you write a song for the first kid,
you have more kids.
Oh, yeah.
You got to write more songs for the other kids. And maybe those other songs aren't as inspired or as good. Mm. But I have a friend who writes a song for every child. And some of those songs just feel like an obligation.
Yeah,
I gotta be
one
honest.
Sounds a little like Marianne, a little lamb. Yeah. I love a good, simple line like, you never know what she might do before her doing days are through. I just love a good, simple,
it sums up life
straight,
right there,
straight line like that. All right. Your mother and I, we did this act. All right, let's listen. What the hell?
Some hotel. Until you, John Hyatt was the last artist that Adam liked, so that's why we're hearing John.
Yeah. It is love that brings you here. A love that will not disappear. Georgia, honey, you can come. All right. All right, let me give a little love to one of our fine sponsors before we let Sarah and David bolt. All right, Sarah, David, thank you so much. David, you can find at Wild About Music.
Please, help me get past Rick Springfield. It's getting desperate. With your help and Sarah's help, it could happen today. It's a long battle.
The Blessed Unrest, let's go ahead and pre-order that, available July 16th. And sarahbmusic.com is where you go if you want to check out her website.
I've heard the whole album, and I think it's her best record. And there's a song called Little Black Dress that's my favorite song right now. So I would order it now to get ready for that song.
All right, let's take a quick break. Be back with Maria Menounos next.
And now Sarah Bareilles back in 2013, along with David Wilde. That was a really good show. And if you're looking for something to watch, check out Sarah Bareilles' performance in Atlanta. It's like a DVD release, but it's on YouTube streaming somewhere. And it's just her and a piano in the audience, and it's incredible. All right, that will do it for part one of today's Corolla Classics, but stick around, part two coming up next.